Now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Steffi Barnett. And today on the show, we're talking about what it means to be gender fluid.
Plus, the news team are going in depth on a story of your choice.
All today.
Right here on Shout Out. Sorry, I got dared to do that.
Don't you normally play that?
No, well, the normal one sounds very, very similar, doesn't it? Hang on, let me stop that one. A normal one sounds like this.
Yes. I think they're bored by now, Andy.
I like the new one.
You like the new
one? I feel like I'm at a fun fair. It feels very appropriate for summer.
You must remember what that is, though.
Yeah, Muppets.
You must know the Muppets.
Yeah. Oh, I know the Muppets, but I mean I have vague childhood memories.
What are you trying to insinuate?
that we're old.
Not old, that we're Muppets.
No, someone pointed out to
me. Somebody's got their hand up your jacksie. I know, operating you.
It got pointed out to me that our kind of backing that we talk over top of show sounds really like the Muppets theme tune. So I said for a joke, I'll play it and see what everyone else thinks.
Okay, as long as we don't get sued.
I mean, if you'd rather, we could always have this one.
Oh,
I know this.
Please, do you realise that is the most played track on Friday's drive time on Radio 2? When I finish, it's, what's his name? Radio 2 guy.
Simon Mayer.
Yeah, him. He follows me. And he plays within three tracks The Muppets. He plays this. It's the most requested track on his show.
I mean, that just sounds like a meme to me. It's like Rickrolling. Have you ever heard of Rickrolling?
No.
It's when you tell someone, click this link to find out that, I don't know, you just won £1 million. And when you click the link, you get Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up, Never Gonna Let You Down. It's just that whole thing on the internet. You do it with anything, just Rickroll people.
I mean, I think it was, what, 60s, 70s that this was
the
kind
Muppets.
Of...
Yeah. I used to watch
well,
them when
when this kind of like song was made, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can go on YouTube and just type in Menomina by the Muppets. Yeah. It's the most hilarious video
Kermit,
you've
Miss
ever
Piggy,
seen.
Animal. Hero animal.
I used to like Beaker.
Oh,
Beaker?
Oh, of course you do. Yes.
The looks they're giving each other, I swear. You can't see them, but honestly, picture paints 1,000 words.
Well, I was going to say something about resemblance, but I think it's the glasses.
Oh, anyway, we'll go back to ours, shall we? So, anyway, how are we? Well, hello, Ella.
Hello.
Swarm.
It is very warm, isn't it? I'm not complaining. We are terrible in this country. The slightest bit of warmth and we're like, oh, it's too hot. And I really like it. It's lovely.
What, sat in the studio?
Well, it's quite warm, quite warm in here, isn't it?
Well, some of us are hot and some aren't.
Yeah. And we can tell which ones are wearing deodorant too, can't we?
You're really getting a multi-sensory experience if you're listening to this show.
3D radio.
It's all good. So, and if you're listening at the weekend and the weather's not so good, I am sorry. I was really hoping it was going to be a sunny weekend because, of course, it's not a bank holiday weekend till August. It looks like it's going to be a bit overcast for the weekend, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, it's going to be thunderstorm on Saturday. It's going to be lush tomorrow.
Yes.
For our Bristol listeners, that's girt lush.
Girt lush, yeah. You did that earlier as well on the text, didn't you?
What, girt lush?
Instead of our.
Our, yeah.
Yeah, that's a real Bristolian thing. Yeah.
Arr.
So, well, yeah, it was lovely. I mean, we worked down in the centre and I walked out and the whole of the harbour side just had people like sunbathing with a pint of beer in their hand and taking in the lovely lovely atmosphere and the like. So, and that temporary bridge is coming down. They've finally opened that bridge. They've been trying to,
you know,
the one that goes across to Wapping Wharf in that area by the M shed. Yes.
Yeah, it's open. Pedestrians only.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and cyclists. So, and finally. How many of you have seen the yellow bikes?
Yes. Oh, yeah, I've seen
yo bikes.
They're all parked in near Picton Street or Stokes Croft. They're all there.
We got to work. There was one outside the door. We had to move it. And then when we came out later, it had gone. But you just like scan it, it unlocks and charges you a quid and off you go, don't you?
I think that's the problem they're having with them so far, though, is people are just kind of leaving them wherever they want to, because apparently the scheme's going to pick them up from all across the city. And I don't think they've quite worked out that kink yet.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I believe that they're proving so popular, they're planning to add more bikes to it.
It'll be pretty good. I once did that with a bike in Paris for a day with my mum, which was really nice in spring.
Oh. Did it charge you a franc? Or be a euro
now? It charged us much more than a franc. And when we came back and we had to return our little ticket thing, my mum panicked and upended her purse in front of this French policeman, who I had to kind of communicate with in my very broken 15-year-old French to explain that she wasn't insane. She was just very worried about a ticket.
She wasn't in the Seine? What, in the river?
I see what you did there.
Anyway, right, should we move on and get some events?
Mm-hmm.
You nearly forgot your jingle there, didn't you?
I did. It's true. I just didn't think I was that special, you know?
Just for you, Ella.
To get a whole jingle.
Anyway, what were you talking about today?
So the big one for me is La Cage aux Folles at Bristol.
The film? Film?
It's the stage play.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. Which is going to be really, really awesome. And I mean, La Cage aux Folles is going to be fantastic. I presume, obviously, if you haven't heard of it, it's,
you'd have heard of the music.
You would have seen the movie, The Birdcage, with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you should have heard of it. If you haven't heard of it, Google it, because we, you
Isn't
know.
It where the song I Am What I Am comes from?
It's certainly not in the in the movie.
No, I don't think a lot of the songs are in the movie.
No.
The ending song was amazing. I remember that much. I can't remember what it's called. So that's on at the Hippodrome?
Yep, so it's on the Hippodrome from the 16th to the 20th of May. And tickets are priced from £17, which is pretty affordable for the Hippodrome. It's going to be on at 7:30pm and 2:30pm with captioned and audio-described performances, signed performances and touch tours on various dates. So if you have any accessibility issues, it is worth knowing that you can still go see this super cool play.
And after, in the piano bar.
Yes, after in the piano bar, we have the inimitable Aidan Strickland doing a one-man show, Orlando. It's a drag show, and in his words, he's posted about it on Facebook, and he says, it's like Virginia Woolf, but a 500-year-old drag queen musically abusing your pets. It's great fun. And tickets to that are £6. Like rightly said, Steffi, afterwards in the piano bar on May 27th at 10 o'clock. So that's Saturday, May 27th at 10 o'clock.
Okay. I have an event. There's a beach party going on at Cameo. It's a Western Supermare or Bristol-on-Sea.
If I know Paul, he's going to fill the place with sand and all. He does things like that.
He does, yeah. You obviously got to wear beach wear. So mankinis, bikinis and shorts. Go in a mankini. Go on, dare you.
Me? Good Lord, no.
It's free entry and it's between 9 and 2. As I said, that's Cameo Wallace Scott Road. If you want the postcode, it's BS. 23 1UG. Now, Western Supermare Pride tickets are available while you're there. £15 for a day and night ticket, and the cabaret after party only ticket is £10.
Can I ask you a question about Western Pride? Is it ticket only entry, or is it one of those donation ones like Bristol Pride is?
No, as far as I'm aware, the day is free. Yeah. You have to pay for the you do have to pay to get in the event. All these pre-events are free, so is donations as you go. Pride is accessible by a charge at the gate, and also the after party is to pay for the. They've got a good lineup of guests this year.
Yeah. Cool.
We've got Nigel and the Pride Western Supermare Pride team coming in. I can tell you when.
In a few weeks' time, isn't it? Yeah.
Some elevator music.
It's on the 15th of June.
Cool.
They'll be sat in the studio.
So a couple of weeks' time.
Bucket of sand telling us all what's going on.
I just looked it up, by the way. I am right. La Cage aux Folles is famous for I Am What I Am, which, of course, was a massive gay anthem in the 90s.
It was, yeah. Certainly not in The Birdcage, the American version of the movie.
No.
With Gene Hackman.
It's definitely in the stage show. I presume it'll be in the one at the Hippodrome.
So you know know, whilst we're at it, I just feel like I need to mention, because I went to see Twelfth Night last week at the Globe Theatre in London, and it is starring a beautiful drag queen called Legato Chocolat as the Fool Festa. And I've also just recently watched Paris is Burning, which is obviously a documentary about the drag scene in New York in the 70s, which is all available on YouTube for free. And just recently, drag has been in my life as this amazing cultural thing. So if you get the chance, £5 tickets to the Globe to stand up. And I know the London is a bit of a trip, but it is worth it. Twelfth Night is gorgeous and very, very queer.
So you might see you doing Drag King at some point.
No, well, you know what? Actually, my girlfriend really wants to. My girlfriend keeps kind of running ideas by me. She's very excited. So I think I'm going to be reviewing. But yeah.
Cool. Okay, thank you very much, Ella.
You're welcome.
Shout out. LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
See, you need some sunshine and gin and tonic and Pink Floyd. It's a real summery type of like laid back song, that one, isn't it?
Yes. So, I love Pink Floyd.
That's another brick in the
come
wall.
On.
That was before my time, okay? I just like that one.
70s, wasn't it? 70s?
Well, I was born in 78, so I was two by the time the 70s run finished. So, anyway, I really like that song, so. Hello, Tara.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
So, Anella's still with us.
Hi.
So, I didn't realise it got shouting on the end of that song.
We're going to be talking, I think this is going to run into more shows than just one. There's a huge subject, gender fluidity. Now, on the line, we have Arlo. Are you there, my love? Are you there?
Hello, I'm there.
Good. we've got Ella, we've got Tara, Andy and myself in the studio. Ella's going to start the conversation.
Yes, I am.
So, talking about gender fluidity, should we start with kind of what is gender fluidity? Because I didn't actually know until I started reading the show notes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I really could talk about this till the cows come home. Okay, I'm going to start, and then Tara, you just wave when you want to dive in. Yeah.
Can
okay.
I just ask then, let's start with a question.
Yeah.
Because of my age, there is no such thing as gender fluidity when I was... So is this something that's always been with us, or is it something brand new that's just popped up?
Yeah, so it's definitely an always been with us kind of humanity kind of thing. So there are a couple of things I want to mention. First of all, and most importantly, our very strict understanding of binary gender is something that has been critiqued by many as being a side effect of British imperialism and religious reform in the 1800s. So binary gender isn't even a thing in English. A lot of people feel a little bit awkward when they use they as a pronoun, for example, but that's perfectly natural and also fantastically grammatically correct in the English language. We're just out of the habit because of these aggressive religious binary reforms from the 1800s and then that being enforced by the British Empire wherever it went.
Now, the other one that we had with they is it's often associated as being a plural.
Yeah, so I mean, English is like hundreds of other languages, quite literally, where we can use lots of words as both plural and singular. So in French, you've got vous, although obviously French is slightly different because it does have gendered language. But for example, in Hindi, you've got a third gender pronoun, and the same in Finnish, you have gender neutral pronouns, which can be used as plurals, but can also be used as singulars. And that's the same in English. They is both singular and plural, which is, you know, satisfyingly multiple for something that represents kind of multiple and fluid and non-binary identities. The other thing to mention, so we get this from the very start, is that binary identity in the way that we understand it, and by we I mean kind of the West in Britain and America, is very much a Western thing. Right. So, you know, it's not something that goes all the way around the world. It's not something that goes all the way through history. It's not even something that's natural. It's actually quite unnatural for us to have such strict notions of gender, because whilst... So you might have heard of sexual dimorphism, which can lead to intersex, like physical traits. Whilst actually having physical traits from sexual dimorphism is pretty rare, although not that rare, same number of people in the world who are intersex as who are redheaded. It is.
Wow, I didn't know that one.
Yeah, I know, right? It's pretty cool. it is actually really, really common to have some variation of sexual dimorphism, and that's linked to like transgender identities, but also non-binary and gender fluid identities.
So is it very much a case of, because when we talked about things like homosexuality and heterosexuality, a very, very well-known scale called the Kinsey scale comes springing to mind, and we do this classic boxing, you're either gay or you're straight, and it's like, no, you're not, because there's bisexual, but that goes all across the spectrum. Are we saying that's exactly the same with gender?
I mean, yeah, I mean, similar. I mean, Alfred Kinsey always makes me laugh because the man spends his whole life studying sexuality and thinks, says, pick a number between 1 and 6 and that's what you are, really. Yeah.
And it's actually quite out of date now. There's a red-purple scale as well.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah,
I was trying to explain it to my parents, you see, way back when I came out in the 90s, and it was an easy way of explaining that it's not as black and white, and that's my point. We're saying that it's the same with gender, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, gender is a spectrum or a scale. It's basically whatever you want it to be. And whilst I did mention historical stuff and I did mention language and I've mentioned like nature, so like biological stuff, I also want to say that, you know, lots of people can be and choose to be non-binary or gender fluid for social reasons, like because gender is a social construct. The way that we practice and exercise and perform gender has nothing to do with any biological imperative at all. There is no such thing as a biological gender imperative. We perform gender in this way because of the environment in which we've grown up. And lots of people feel constrained or uncomfortable with that, and so they choose to exercise it. So, for example, whether you're dressing up in drag or whether you're saying that you're non-binary and that's the identity that you feel comfortable in and you feel identifies yourself, all of those things are valid. You don't have to be you don't have to go through biological testing to prove whether or not you're sexually dimorphic to say you're non-binary.
Hello. Being of a certain age, when I was growing up, there was tomboy used. But if you were a boy and you had girly attributes, it was derogatory. You were called a sissy, whereas being a tomboy as a girl was completely fine. Are we saying that being those terms were a precursor to some form of gender fluidity?
I mean, I think that they were probably an interpretation of different kinds of identities. So, for example, this is pretty basic and I hope we can discuss it in later shows, but the traditional diner of the southwestern USA acknowledged 4 genders: feminine woman, masculine woman, feminine man, and masculine man. We've also got the Mahu of Hawaii. There is an intermediate state between man and woman, or to be a person of indeterminate gender. And the term third gender has been used to describe hijras of India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan, who have gained legal identity, plus Faafin of Polynesia and sworn virgins of the Balkans. So it's something that people feel, it's something that people experience, it's something valid that has been here, and we have censored and controlled the language we use to talk about it in order to try and erase those identities, but those identities have always been there.
Can we at this point bring in Arlie?
Hello.
Arlie, now, do you class yourself as gender fluid?
I identify as non-binary.
Can we go through that a minute about the terminology, because there's like to be queer, non-binary, gender queer, like I said, or gender fluid. Do all those terms mean something completely different, or are they just different words for the same thing?
I think they're probably like different in nuanced ways, and probably also mean something slightly different to different people, I suppose. I think you kind of find maybe the terminology that feels right for you wherever you're at in your life at the time. But for me, it's the reason I like non-binary, or that just really felt natural to me when I first heard it, is because I feel like what it means to me is just very simply some kind of gender outside of the male-female gender binary that we have in our culture now.
Do you do you tend to flit from one binary side to another, or do you specifically think you stay right in the middle?
I actually feel that for me, I feel quite settled in one particular place, and I don't know if I'd even describe it as like being in the middle of those two things. Like, I guess my belief about gender is that at the simplest level, that it isn't a binary, that we've made a mistake by trying to identify it as a binary when it's much more complicated. And I don't necessarily, I mean, it's hard to kind of pin down a good definition, but I don't necessarily think that man and woman are the things at either end of a spectrum and that non-binary is something in the middle. I think if I were to like visualize it, to me it's almost more of like a circle or like a globe type shape where there's like endless possibilities.
That's quite an interesting take on it, isn't it?
That's a good description. Yeah. Yes.
It's kind of how I visualize it in my mind anyway. Mm. And so for me, non-binary just simply means not of that constructed binary. And it feels enough for me because I feel like, okay, yeah, like I know that I'm not the gender that I was told I had to be for years. But I also don't feel like I am a man. That doesn't feel comfortable either. And non-binary is just this really easy way to say, I don't have to come up with a perfectly defined answer. I feel just comfortable to say,
You're proud of who you are.
Yeah, just outside of that binary. Mm. And, you know, I've got, you know, the pronouns that I like to use are he, him, his. And so I ask people to use those and be respectful of that. And I kind of feel like, you know, if people can understand that, I've got what I need, really. That lets me be comfortable.
So, Ali, so we part of the reason we invited you is that we met you at the British Podcast Awards. You're part of a podcast that you make with your friend CJ, and the podcast is called The Boy Who Didn't Live. And the premise of the podcast, as I understand it, please correct me if I get this wrong, is that CJ wasn't allowed to read the Harry Potter books for religious reasons, and so now you're reading them together.
The question
I have is that, as I understand it, CJ identifies with they, them pronouns. So why did you choose the title The Boy Who Didn't Live? Because I assume that that's referring to CJ.
It's actually The Boy Who Hasn't Lived, just in case anyone wants to. No, that's totally fine. Everyone always says that. We should have probably just named it that. Before I remember it. I came up with the title for the podcast as an idea. It was actually the first idea, and maybe, I don't know if we were just being lazy, but we didn't venture beyond that. Obviously it's a kind of, well, if anyone's read Harry Potter, they'll know it's a play on the name of the first chapter of the first book, which is called The Boy Who Lived. And so the idea was like CJ being the boy who hasn't lived because they haven't read the books. I kind of went to CJ and I said, like, well, I've had this idea for the name of the podcast, but I said, I don't know, like, because CJ is non-binary as well, but I think, I don't want to speak for CJ, but I think they feel comfortable kind of identifying on the masculine sort of side of, or if there is a side, but in that kind of area of gender. But I said to CJ, well, there's this idea, but does it make you feel misgendered? And CJ just straight away said, no, I like it and it's fine. So I think it's one of those things where you can kind of, for yourself, expand the meaning of certain words as well. So, like, if we're thinking of gender as a binary, then boy is, like, one of the two options in the binary. But if you start to think, actually, maybe gender is a lot bigger than this binary, I think you also have the ability to sort of, you know, you can use the language that's available to you in creative ways and in what ways feel comfortable. So
yeah.
It does sound like the main thing I'm getting out of this is it should be you that chooses. No one else. You should decide how you want to identify. And in an ideal world, everyone should accept it. I think at the moment we're still at a point in time where a lot of people don't actually understand it too.
Mm. I think I really liked everything that Ella said, because I think one thing that people say a lot when people bring up non-binary identities or gender fluidity and that kind of thing is like this idea that it's some kind of new thing or it's like a fad. And like the facts are that it's absolutely existed throughout history. And like Ella said, there's loads of evidence of that. There's lots of reading you could do on the kind of background of that. It's a fact that's always existed, that people's gender can be very much beyond the binary that we're working with. And I think maybe the thing that's sort of like newer is just that at the time we are in history, we're developing new language to describe that. And people are more able maybe before to sort of like build communities with other people, find other people online and that kind of thing. And out of that new sort of new language is being adopted, and people, you know, people find that language to be useful, and maybe that makes it feel like it's a new thing to some people that haven't thought of it. But really, it's just giving language to something a lot of people have experienced all through history and have had, have found different ways of expressing with different language. Or
listen, Ali, sorry, we're really rapidly running out of time. We're running quite a bit early over, so it sounds like it's a subject we're definitely going to have to come back and do again. And as
it would be nice if you came back on with CJ.
Yeah, we'd love that. We'd be well up for that.
Cool, that'd be brilliant. It's been lovely to talk to you. Thank you for phoning in. It's been lovely to hear your side of it as well, especially from someone who's actually experiencing it. It's great. So, now, stay with us. We're going to get the news headlines up next, and I promise you, it's a subject we'll come back to. So if you have any thoughts, do get in contact, studio@shoutoutradio.lgbt. Thank you, Ali.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
The Shoutout Podcast.
Oh, I like that song. You Make Me Feel...
Yes, you do, Andy.
I knew you were going to see that. The minute I looked at your face, I was like, I know.
You opened the door so wide.
So
that was Sylvester.
That was 1978, that one.
Yeah, Sylvester was the first person I knew that was gender fluid.
Oh, right.
Yeah, person of colour, sometimes performed as male and others as female.
Sylvester. Oh, I put down it was Lazaro. That's obviously a mix or something.
Mm. Yeah, that was the mix. Yeah,
oh, right. Well, it's definitely Sylvester. Sylvester was an icon.
Yeah.
So, hello, Terry.
Hello.
Hello, Natalie.
Hello.
Can we get some news headlines?
Yes, I think so. Been indulging.
This is Shout Out News on Thursday, the 25th of May, 2017.
A blue heritage plaque has been unveiled to honour the young man who initiated the 1980s campaign group Lesbians and Gays Support the Miners, which brought together the gay scene and striking miners in opposition to the government of Margaret Thatcher, and whose story is commemorated in the hit film Pride. Mark Ashton, who sadly was to die in February 1987 from an AIDS-related illness, was secretary of the Young Communist League, an active in left wing politics as well as in gay campaigning, and he helped bring the left round to supporting LGBT equality at a time when there were still pockets of homophobia in left wing circles. The blue plaque to commemorate Ashton and his friends was unveiled at the Gays the Word bookshop on Friday.
A group of students at a Canadian university have, according to the newswire Pink News, issued an apology for playing a song they described as transphobic during an event for new students. The track in question was Walk on the Wild Side, a well-known celebration of queer 1970s culture by Lou Reed, from his album Transformer. The student body concluded that the 1973 track, which became a hit for Reed, was essentially fetishizing members of the New York underground community, including its trans subjects. Other students, however, pointed out that Reed himself had a transgender partner during this period, and that the song was intended as a groundbreaking celebration of queer and alternative cultures.
Local anarchist newsletter The Bristolian, known for its slapping down of council officials and local politicians, pulls no punches as it takes on Bishopsworth councillor Richard Eddy, a man who has long campaigned against gay and trans equality. Mr Eddy had written to the Bristol Post threatening to boycott the Colston Hall once its name is changed. With some mirth, The Bristolian remarked, "Is this because he will only go to venues that are named after slave traders?" Message from The Bristolian to Richard Eddy, "Why don't you push off altogether?"
A radio station that inspired two of Shoutout's members to get involved in broadcasting has been granted a licence to transmit, 53 years after it was founded. Radio Caroline was not Britain's first pirate station, but it was certainly its most famous and has a long and dramatic history, which includes ships running aground, a sinking, radio towers collapsing, and a land-based installation burning to the ground. In spite of all this, the station just kept coming back and broke new ground by airing the first openly gay radio presenter, the late Tony Allen, in 1973, sponsoring the Stonehenge People's Free Festival and using its airwaves to promote a Hindu-inspired philosophy of loving awareness. Now the broadcast regulator Ofcom has finally decided to issue the stations with a licence to transmit on medium wave to the Suffolk and Essex areas as part of a new round of community broadcast licensing.
The magazine DJ, which charts the dance music scene, publishes a special feature this month on trans people in the electronic music genre. With dance music deeply indebted to past forms of music such as house and disco, the magazine recognises the role that trans producers and trans contemporary DJs have had on the music scene. You can pick up your copy at record shops or good news agents.
Talented guitarist and polymath Brian May from the rock band Queen has opened up for the first time to the press about his late bandmate Freddie Mercury. The flamboyant gay pop star who passed away from an AIDS-related illness 25 and a half years ago. May said that Freddie lost his foot in the months leading up to his untimely death at the age of just 45. He also speculated that Freddie might have survived if anti-HIV retroviral therapies were just a few months sooner in being discovered. Brian May was talking in the Sunday Times magazine.
Plans are now well advanced for Folsom Street East, the annual New York-based fetish festival, which unites the gay, bisexual, trans and heterosexual fetish scenes in one event. Sunday, June the 18th is the day on which New York's united scenes come together. Visit the Shoutout website for a link to the 2017 Folsom Street East website, but please note that not all its contents may be safe for browsing at work.
The Islamic holy month of Ramadan commences tomorrow evening when the full moon is sighted above the Saudi city of Mecca. Muslims will be fasting during the hours of daylight and committing to acts of charity for the lunar month's duration. LGBT Muslim groups such as London's Iman have sent their customary Ramadan greetings to their supporters, as have the Association of British Muslims, the oldest Muslim group in the UK and one of the first to take a positive position on LGBT equality.
And finally, the Supreme Court in the city of Taipei, the capital of Taiwan in Asia, has ruled that a previous constitutional ruling restricting marriage to heterosexuals is unlawful. According to the news channel Al Jazeera, thousands of gay and trans people celebrated outside the court, known as the Judicial Yuan. Activists are cautious as they know that well-financed Christian fundamentalist groups are to try and appeal the ruling. For now, though, they summarise that Taiwan has become a beacon for diversity and equality in Asia.
For these news stories and more, visit our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
And Natalie Sweating to Death.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
And that was the polite version of Natalie's new name. Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's NyQuil. That's one of your ones, isn't it?
London, I like that. Grammar.
Yeah.
Something inside so strong.
Yeah. Nice dancey track.
Hmm.
So.
Also nice words.
Yeah.
Meaningful for the subject matter of today's show.
Yeah, very true. So. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. It's a little warm in here. You've all been
slightly warm.
It's supposed to be aircon, isn't it?
It is. Yeah,
it isn't.
The aircon's not working very well, unfortunately. So, but yes,
we've got
luckily
Terry
listeners
who
can't
stayed,
smell it, so it's absolutely fine.
Well, no, it's not smelly radio. In fact, there is no bad smell in this studio.
No,
I haven't smelled anything yet.
No.
Terry stayed in, and Mary's joined us, and Ella's back in because it's the Ella Watts show today.
Okay, I would like to say that I was asked. I did not force myself on you.
We like having you on air with us.
We
do. Fine, so.
We do.
Now we're talking about the issue of kind of freedom of speech, aren't we? In this next bit.
Yes.
But before we start, we do want to say that from everyone at Shout Out, our hearts are with everyone in Manchester with everything that's going on. It's
absolutely
terrible, isn't it? So, but the issue we're talking about, well, Terry, you introduced it. It's your feature, isn't it? So,
well, yes, I was asked to sort of like choose something that's come up in the last couple of weeks, and the issue of freedom of speech and freedom of the internet as well keeps coming up in relation to LGBT rights and wider issues of human rights and so on. And in the last couple of days, in the wake of the tragedy that unfolded in Manchester, some people unfortunately showed their infantile side on social media. Just a few hours after the news broke that there had been an attack by a religious extremist on a concert in Manchester, one Twitter user posted a series of tweets saying that the bomber should have killed people on Canal Street, which of course is in the heart of Manchester's gay village.
Well, it is Manchester's gay village.
Yeah, other Twitter users reported him, and according to Pink News, the account was shut down. But whilst this picture of nasty homophobia was unfolding, Katie Hopkins, the veteran Motormouth and LBC presenter, she was trying to backtrack on her first response to the Manchester bombing when she said, "We need a final solution." Now, as the commentator and journalist Nick Cohen remarked, even if Hopkins knows nothing of Nazism, which I doubt, the words "final solution" can only mean ethnic cleansing of Muslim people. Now, Hopkins tried to delete her tweet, but of course people had taken screenshots of it and reposted it. And in a related vein, The Guardian yesterday reported that members of Parliament have received, get this, 190,000 abusive tweets in the last 3 weeks alone.
Wow.
And usually it's heterosexual white male Twitter users, it has to be said, that are responsible for the bulk of these tweets, so they think. Many of the tweets included death threats. So I'd like our team to consider a few interrelated questions. Firstly, do minorities, including LGBT people, have to put up with hate speech on the grounds that Britain has freedom of speech? Should the internet be totally free and unregulated for this type of speech? Is there a positive side of Twitter and things like this? And if we need to regulate it, how do we go about doing that?
I don't think... As someone who works in technology...
Exactly, I thought you'd have... Yeah, yeah.
Regulating the internet is not possible.
Yeah.
You just can't. But what you can do is when people tweet things like this, is you can report them and they can be tracked down. You know, it would be akin to saying, should every single piece of mail be read? I mean, we don't do that. But if you receive hate mail, you go and you give it to the police and they follow it through and they investigate it.
I suppose the problem is, isn't it, what is the difference between free speech, which I value that we have this country.
Class this is free speech.
And yeah, but how? Where do you draw that line between free speech and hate speech?
Yeah, and somebody like Katie Hopkins is somebody who sort of thrives on being on that sort of boundary, doesn't she? And
there's got her in trouble a lot of times.
What's his name? That Milo Yiannopoulos? I don't know if you've come across him, a right-wing sort of commentator. He's actually a gay man, although he's been disowned by the gay movement for making comments about paedophilia and things like this. And he's made some very inflammatory comments in the last couple of days saying that Ariana Grande was responsible for the bombing. So, you know, and again,
how
I think...
How much of that, though, is them attention-seeking to get more publicity?
Well, indeed, indeed.
Whereas someone just tweeting something saying, oh, I think they should have blown up the gay village instead, they could have at least done us a favour, is effectively what he was
implying.
Is hateful, and it is inciting people to do hate crime. And that's where I would class that as hate speech. Would you not agree?
No, I mean, I would agree. I feel like this is making me think a lot of, first of all, The Guardian's more recent investigation into Facebook's policies about whether or not they're going to take stuff down. But it's also making me think of everything surrounding the Charlie Hebdo attacks, the satirical magazine that was bombed in Paris.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes,
that led to the Twitter trend, hashtag Je suis Charlie. And a lot of conversation that came out after that... centered around this very question of free speech versus hate speech, because that particular magazine peddled vitriolic Islamophobic hate speech, which really, really abused people of colour in the most disgusting way. And people using that magazine as an emblem of free speech was really upsetting to a lot of people, because that magazine was written by middle-class white people and it was used as a platform to practice hate speech. And whilst no one should ever, 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 I hope this is obvious, ever be murdered, at the same time, I do think that there is a difference, and Terry Pratchett spoke at the time about there being a difference between exercising your freedom of speech and A, expecting people to like it, and B, expecting to have the right to abuse people who are in a position of social vulnerability under you. So for example, if you're a white straight man and you start talking about how black gay men are something, 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 you are using your social power and calling it freedom of speech to not only abuse this person, but to further a psychological mindset which legitimizes violence and degradation of that community. And I think at that point it really does move outside of freedom, because freedom of speech doesn't mean say whatever you want whenever you want to. Freedom of speech means you are able to speak. It doesn't mean you are able to speak without criticism.
No,
that's a very good distinction, actually. And I think sometimes we have to bear in mind that the idea of the anonymity of Twitter makes some people feel very powerful, doesn't it? And maybe some of the people who are saying some of the nastier things are people who feel very disempowered in the rest of their lives, suddenly get access to social media, get attention, feel powerful, feel that they can say anything they like.
Is this the same sort of thing, using the analogy of somebody sat in a car in their box and being really aggressive and verbally aggressive in their car, but that's if they were out walking on the pavement and bumped into somebody or had to move, it would be, oh, sorry, didn't mean to do that.
There is something
that it's slightly set back, isn't it?
Social media allows them to put them in the box.
And I think that's a good point that both of you are making. Excuse me. Is that people do behave differently on the internet.
They
than
think
they do
that because they're behind a screen.
There's no consequence.
No. But you see, that's my point.
And also that maybe it's not hurting anybody. It's not as damaging as saying to someone's face that you feel a particular way about them. It's anonymized.
But of course, I guess the problem is when you get to stuff like the internet and social media, and I think Andy's right in terms of, A, the internet is just not something that can be regulated, but I think Terry and Mary are right in terms of the fact that like big social platforms like Twitter are things that can be regulated, and that's what we need to look at, is that it starts as something insular. It starts as, I'm behind a screen and it's anonymous, but it turns into mob mentality, and that's the point when it starts getting actively dangerous. You know, when you get millions of people following, I don't know, a hashtag like all lives matter, or men's lives matter, trying to, or like white lives matter or blue lives matter, trying to legitimize, for example, the senseless murder of hundreds of black people in the USA.
Where it becomes a problem. Basically, the way I look at it is the law should be the law and should state that you can't hate speech should be illegal, is what I'm trying to say. It shouldn't matter the way you do that, and if it is via Twitter or something, for starters, people like Twitter are quite good. They have got filters in place. They're not brilliant. Perhaps they should be upped. They should be, you know, encouraged to abide by the law and put filters in that help people like the police spot them, because it happens so quick. I mean, Twitter has got millions a second going on. They can't physically all be watched. You need to report them, and if they can put filtering in to spot the people that are likely to cause that, that all helps. Trying to regulate it totally is just not possible. But what you can do is, a lot of people don't realise the internet is not anonymous. It is almost impossible to be anonymous on the internet, and anything you do can be tracked.
But it takes time, doesn't it, to trace the origin of something. What I became very aware of today, and I'm repeatedly made aware of it, is like in our lives we can so much be in a little bubble, even on the internet, of having friends and acquaintances who, you know, generally believe the similar sort of things to us. We might have a few little tiffs about things, but today I saw a particular photograph on the internet that somebody I knew had shared, and I decided to go and search for that picture online to see where else it was being used. And it was an image, I won't completely describe it, but I would just say it was an image that had been photoshopped to make you believe a particular thing about Muslim people, which I don't believe to be true. I know not to be true. Then you do that and you trace that and you just become aware of hundreds and hundreds of comments and sites that are obviously populated by people with whom I have very little contact.
We're crossing into the realms of things like fake news.
It's fake, but what I'm saying is that there's all this opinion out there that we often isolate ourselves from, but it's out there.
Still there on the web.
I would also say that I feel like a really good thing about discussing this here and now is that another issue I come across in my usage of the internet and in my experience of the media is that we have hierarchies of censorship and we have hierarchies of what counts as hate crime. So, for example, Islamophobia often slips through the net because it's not serious enough. But if someone was talking about, it's difficult to even choose something.
Race
outside of Islamophobia, then it's often monitored more strictly, and obviously racism is not okay. But we need to start accepting that hate crime takes many forms, and that if it is oppressing a minority or encouraging violence against that minority, non-binary people, for example, and trans people are often underrepresented in the media. Often people get away with transphobic things on like Facebook and Twitter, even if you report them, we have to think, why are we deciding that some people are more worth protecting than others? And like that comes back to the American police.
And this is the other question. And I know that there's a big effort being made to make the law equal for all the kind of hate crimes like that, because they all carry different sentences. You can get in a lot more trouble for one thing and less for another, but the impact on that person could be very much the same. Or than those people, I should say, you know. And that's not fair either. So I don't know. It's an interesting one. You could talk about in an awful lot of depth, can you?
I think social media and the internet is always going to be a double-edged sword, isn't it? It's great that we can have our freedom of speech, but other people will use their freedom of speech in ways that we don't agree with.
And I do genuinely believe that the acceleration we've seen in equality is partly down to the internet and people being able to research things in the comfort of their own home.
Find the community themselves.
Well, not just that. I mean, things like, I know for a fact that when I came out to my parents, they genuinely didn't understand it, and they researched it. Now, my parents in their 70s are not so computer literate, but the point is that these days it's a lot easier to go online, and because it's in the privacy of your own home, you can research these things you may be embarrassed about. If you're a parent and you're embarrassed because your kids are...
That is actually great, isn't it? But when people do that, there's correct information they can find and incorrect information. So you've got to use your own personal filter.
You've got to use discretion, haven't you? That's
discretion,
isn't it?
Is the correct word, isn't it? And compare your sources.
Yes.
Thank you, guys. That's been absolutely fantastic. It's a really good subject.
As always, we'll go into more detail sometime. Let us know your thoughts and views. So studio@shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Indeed.
Or just go on our website and click on Contact Us and you can get in contact. So I love having you in doing stuff, Ella. You're always so full of information. You're like a female Terry. Terry's our big fountain of knowledge as well, aren't you, mate?
Well, I might be actually gender fluid today.
Well done, Terry.
Take exception to that.
Talking of gender fluid, next week, CN Leicester about a new book.
Yes.
They're going to be calling into the studio. And we're also talking about BAME and what it's like to be BAME and LGBT.
Fantastic. Look forward to it.
Interesting. So now the aim of the News Extra that we've just done is we talk about a subject that you'd like us to talk about in depth. So they're going to happen every now and again. If you have one you'd like us to talk about, do email in and let us know. And
we'll
put it to Terry and let you know what we think. So
your wish is my command. I shall
obey. Come on, think
of something in depth, isn't it? It's quite cool.
Absolutely.
Still, anyway, that's it for this week. Remember, we'd love to know your thoughts on the things we've been talking about, such as gender fluidity.
If you want to get in touch, all the ways to do so are on our website, shoutoutradio.lgbt.
And as we said, next week we'll be back. We'll be taking a look at what it's like to be an ethnic minority and all things being LGBT+.
Join us then.
But from myself and the rest of the team, say bye-bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.